Welcome back. Here we go. It's our Friday Jeff and Erica report for you. We have a lot of updates, and we really should get started right away. Several videos and interesting information. This is a very, very rapidly changing panorama that we're taking in and trying to digest and present to you. It's nonstop. It's crazy. Well, that's what genocide is all about, isn't it? Nonstop. Hello, young lady.
Hello, Jeff.
Gee, how you been?
Okay, so far.
Well,
making it.
Yeah, it's crazy. How are your paramedics faring?
It's definitely busy. They're running nonstop now, and they're having to call in, you know, private service ambulances on top of the, I believe they have four.
I heard a couple of calls like that when we were talking, and that, so that's common now.
It's been common for the last couple of weeks, yeah. And we do still have the people falling down, but now there's, I think, more, I would say, middle-aged people having seizures, strokes, that mm-hmm. type of thing, and then a lot of psychotic breakdowns, just mental instability, suicidal ideation.
Right. The ones I pay attention to that I hear in the background are the people who are 60s, 70s, 80s, any age, but they're non-responsive.
Yeah,
and that's kind of an interesting. It's an interesting term. What does that mean? Post-stroke non-responsive, post-heart attack non-responsive, fall, hit your head non-responsive. I don't know what it means. It's a lot of that, though.
Yeah, there is. It's hard to know what that is. I mean, it could be a stroke.
Could be. Could be anything. I mean, that's the truth.
You know, are they awake and unable to talk? Or are they unconscious?
I do know that when I used to work in television news covering fire services and EMT rescues and so forth calls, they would always, as a dispatcher to the whichever station they were calling out, whichever unit, they would give them a significant amount of information. And now there's very little. I mean, if I were a paramedic or an EMT, I would want to know what the hell I was going out on a run for. I mean, I'd want to know some detail, something, but they just say medical or whatever. They're very short about these things, and without any armor.
I assume the dispatcher is not getting a lot of information from whoever called it in. I think they try to give the information when they have it. But I would think, as a paramedic, that would add to my stress level if I'm responding to something and I don't know what I'm going to find.
The people I used to work around, you know, they'd get 52-year-old suspected heart attack on the floor in the living room, you know, family is there, that kind of thing. They'd at least know something about what they were rolling on. And now they just don't seem to get much information. Maybe the non-responsive parties are calling in the 9/11 emergencies, and they're non-responsive.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Okay, let's get rolling on this Friday and see where we are. First of all, this Karen Kingston story. It has, as they used to say, legs. It's running. It's not going away. The latest is, and I believe that this was published originally, was this published on Robert Malone's Substack?
You're talking about the Substack or the original video?
No, the Substack today, or the new one.
Well, he is amplifying it wherever it's coming from. It appears to be coming from her family. So it's circulating, and he is taking the opportunity to put it up on his social media sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, how do you read that?
Well, I'd read it as
since he's
Pontius.
Implicated in
he's a Pontius Pilate is what he is. He's washing his hands.
Maybe. It's hard to know. You know, is this just a stunt? I don't know.
A soap opera?
Attention getting spent. Is it for real? It's possible it's for real. I mean, he's been known to make threats against other people.
Very intimidating individual at times, no question. Here's the deal. Her apparently her brother and her son, her mother perhaps, issued this note. I'm going to read this. Why? Because it's kind of big news in the alt news world. And we spent a time last Tuesday with David Oates. David Oates will be back shortly. He's going to personally go through that video and do a thorough reverse speech analysis, because we think that there's more there. His students did a wonderful job, but I think if David goes through it, we're going to find out even more. So he's going to go through her video from August, whatever, early August, very early August, I think, and see what else is lurking there in the reverse speech world. So we'll have that for you next Tuesday, I think. Here's what the family's statement says. Since Karen arrived in Mexico, we have maintained continuous communication with her since July 30th. However, her last confirmed location was on August 9th. In light of recent information received by the family, we have taken the necessary steps to officially report Karen as a missing person in Mexico. So she's now MIA. We appreciate your understanding as we collaborate with the appropriate authorities in our determined effort to locate Karen and ensure her safe return. Our primary focus is on these profoundly concerning and all-encompassing endeavors. We commit to providing regular updates as we verify crucial information that adds to our understanding of the situation. At this critical juncture, we kindly request your support in spreading awareness about Karen's disappearance. So she's MIA since August 9th. According to the family. We urge journalists, the public, and our extended networks to share her story and provide any information that could aid in locating Karen. Your overwhelming support has not gone unnoticed, and we are genuinely thankful for your ongoing prayers and appeals for Karen's safe reunion with us, etc. Well, okay, so they put out the missing person bulletin, which was issued in Mexico. It appears that her name is, it's odd. The first name is listed as Nikendra, N-E-K-E-N-D-R-A, and then Karen, and the last name is showing as Kingston. I'm not sure if that can be read as Karen Nikendra with an alias of Kingston. It's a Mexican form, so I don't know. All right, gender female. Well, now she's 49 years old, not 40. All right, she went up. Height, weight, and all that. It's basically similar to what you'd expect here, but more simplistic. All right? So they're putting this form up to show that Karen is definitely missing. Please see below for the translation of the official bulletin, followed by more information, etc. Okay, well, that's up if you want to find it. It's out there. So we're just keeping you up to date on the saga of Karen, Please Don't Kill Me, Kingston.
Yeah, I'd say Mexico's not a real good place to go missing. It's like a black hole.
I wouldn't, on a bet, go to Mexico.
Mm.
Sorry, not a chance. Okay, next up, we're going to move on to the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA. That once august journal, which is now not much more than a people magazine of medical science. It's garbage. All right, here's a story, though. Critics slam JAMA study claiming that 52 U.S. doctors have spread COVID misinformation. Can you spell witch hunt? I think you can. This is a Massachusetts study, University of. Researchers took issue with the researchers' definition of misinformation, as well they should. These are just called opinions. So JAMA puts a study together claiming 52 doctors have different opinions and therefore are putting out misinformation. But it's It's all part of this incredible Bolshevik communist machine. It reminds me very much of reading about how it was in the Soviet Russian Union back in the 30s. Just awful stuff. These are character assassination things. That's all they are.
You know, it's uncanny. And did you see what they determined, or what misinformation is, how that's defined?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us.
All right. There were four categories of so-called misinformation. The first one was claiming vaccines were unsafe and or ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, promoting unapproved medications for prevention or treatment.
Such as
number
HCQ
three,
and ivermectin, now vindicated, of course.
Three, disputing mask-wearing effectiveness. And four, other misinformation, to include conspiracy theories and the virus's origins. So what they did is, for a period of 2 years, January 2021 through December 2022, they surveyed five different social media outlets: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Parler, which I don't think that's around anymore, and then YouTube.
No.
And just collected, they put in buzzwords, I guess, these trigger words.
Well, they surveyed.
Yes. And, I guess there were 52 doctors that were leading the pack in terms of putting this information out there, and I don't know what's going to become of them.
Well, they'll probably end up in Mexico. Look, we're as guilty as hell, according to these people. This is crazy.
Even though the evidence is on the side of these doctors who were, pointing out how dangerous these injections were, how ineffective they continue to be.
Meryl Nass, Dr. Meryl Nass, Thursday sued the Maine Board of Licensure in Medicine and its individual members, alleging that the board violated her First Amendment rights and her rights under the Maine Constitution, and called the JAMA study a piece of propaganda. I would have used a different word, but propaganda gets the message across. She said, there is no science. They, the authors, are trying to make it look like they're doing something quantitative when they're not. There was a lot known about the ineffectiveness of the vaccines at the time they were working on this paper. Oh, you betcha. So, all right. There's the latest from the official world of American medicine, JAMA. Crazy. Crazy stuff. Okay.
Sure is.
We have Geert Vandenbosch back after once again telling us recently that this is my last video. But he somehow apparently has made another one. Set it up for us.
Okay, so he and Dr. Peter McCullough appeared on the High Wire this week. And Geert is saying, I've said this, probably others have said it, these vaccines, so-called vaccines, and the way in which they were administered in the midst of a pandemic, were essentially causing gain of function on the virus by injecting them into people and turning down their immune system, for one thing, and allowing them to carry the virus, replicate the virus unchecked, more or less, or with a weakened immune system, is putting selective pressure on this virus, allowing it to evolve and gain a certain level of fitness so that it will become
worse.
Endemic. I don't believe they don't believe it's endemic just yet, but it's heading in that direction. So endemic means it's here to stay. It's never going away.
Which variant do you mean? We got half a dozen.
Well, that's just it. It's still evolving. It's just going to continue to mutate and evolve. And I really do think that the danger is that it does become stealth adapted at some point, meaning that it can infect without any symptoms. It just evades all of the immune response. Sets up shop wherever that is. I don't know. I mean, if it's the nerve tissue, well, then you've got something like rabies, where, we don't know that it makes its way along the axons the way the rabies virus does, only to appear in the brain some weeks to months later after infection. But that during that entire time, you don't know you have rabies. So that, in a sense, is a stealth-adapted virus.
We should also mention that apparently now, and next hour we'll be talking a little bit more about that with our next guest later on in the program, that people who are not vaxxed apparently are showing up with blood that looks very much like they've been vaxxed. Sludgy, dark, troubled blood. Reload, not good. So we're getting more of that. Talk about stealth. Again, everybody who's been vaxxed, as far as we know, has severe blood trouble. And they're still walking around talking. Some are actually playing sports until they fall over dead. This is a very, very catastrophic virus. And the result, of course, is a spike. I mean, it's just, this is horrible stuff. It is so diabolical. Straight from Satan's own bio lab.
It really is. I mean, it's a blood poison. It's a neurotoxin. It has so many different facets to it that, you know, if your body can rally against some part of it, chances are it can't rally against all of it. So it will find your weakness and exploit it.
Sure does. All right, here's Geert. Let's see, how long is this video approximately?
Well, 2 minutes. It's a very short clip.
Okay.
If you isolate a coronavirus from an animal, and that's also what we did in the past, right, in the early days when I was working in the virology lab, if you want to have a kind of idea what is the threat for another species, could be also for another animal, you start to put that virus on a cell culture, you know, that comes from that different animal species, could be a dog, could be human cells, etc., and you do passages. All over.
So you've done this.
Of course.
Have you done what we hear as gain of function? Would you say that
if you like, well, this is gain of function in the sense that I was working, for example, with feline coronavirus, and you wanted, to put this, for example, you wanted to see to what extent is this could this be infectious for dog? Then you start out with dog cells, right? And you culture the virus, and then, you know, you pass the supernatant. If there is one or the other mutant that happened to be able, you know, to replicate on the dog cells, it's in very, very low concentration, of course. But if you passage it on the same,
if you go in and isolate,
you're going to
you
enrich
that.
It. You're going to enrich it. If you like, this is gain of function.
Yes.
But I'm saying, you know, there is so much focus on what happened at the beginning, whereas nobody seems to realize that the huge gain-of-function experiment that we are doing in the population on the very human species is the mass vaccination.
Yeah.
The gain-of-function, we have seen this, how the virus changed all the time. How
so basically,
the efficacy
you said,
of the,
taking a stalk culture, we're doing this human to human to human
come
under
on,
the
man.
Pressure of vaccines and saying, what is this thing going to do?
This is large-scale mass experiment, gain of function at the largest scale. Gain of function, the virus changes its behavior all the
you
time.
You don't have a billion Petri dishes, but we have a billion people. We are hopping one to the next.
A real experiment.
Wow.
Okay, well, we've certainly alluded to this long ago, and it's quite obvious that when you have people who are essentially walking and talking Petri dishes, you have potential for almost anything to happen. So his point is very well taken. It's part of the plan. This whole thing was thought out all the way up into and including shedding and how that works. And it does appear now that shedding is becoming much more virulent for a lot of reasons in a lot of different types of people, depending upon their apparently their exposure in the shedding world. And the shedding world is, if you want to start with dating, all right, and sex kills now. Sex is deadly. No ifs, ands, or buts. No condom is going to change anything because you're thinking wrong. You need to think about this like people used to think about HIV. Saliva? I said, well, there's no blood in my saliva. Wrong. there's blood in 50% of the saliva, I mean 50% of the people in their saliva all the time. And if you brush your teeth or kiss someone vigorously, 90% of the people will show up with blood and plasma in their saliva, transmitting no problem. Not to mention the saliva itself, the sweat, tears. It just goes on and on. Any body fluid. And then we have exosomes, which are exhalations, basically. And that's another way. There are too many ways that people can get in trouble real easily. They've got to be really
I would contend that this is somewhat worse than HIV. HIV was limited to white blood cells.
Oh, it's
cells,
way
certain,
worse. I only use
certain type of white blood cells. So
that
really
used to be the explanation. You're right.
Blood-to-blood contact for that to for that transmission to occur.
Well, in my book, I made quite a dish. Hold on one sec. In my book, I made a lot of issue about saliva, blood and saliva, HIV being recovered in all body fluids, although it wasn't talked about that much back then. That's the only reason I made that example. This is far worse. You are 100% right. Far worse.
You know, with the virus itself, it was shown to be in the skin, in the secretions of the skin.
Yep.
And I would assume the same is definitely true for the spike protein in these people that have been transfected with the bioweapon. They're now producing spike, and it's coming out of their pores. And we've had many, many examples of people having brief skin-to-skin contact, whether it's a handshake or a brush of the cheek, and within minutes, maybe a day, they're just down for the count. Very sick. Very, very sick. So if it's coming out of the skin, you can bet it's in saliva and every other bodily fluid, and they've pretty much said that. The Pfizer documents of the clinical trials indicated that, and the Moderna patent indicated that, that the protein, the express protein, whatever it is, in this case the spike, can be detected in all bodily fluids, and they were pretty thorough about what bodily fluids are. I don't think they left anything out.
No. By the way, tracing back the HIV to that original 1969, anyhow, congressional hearing where the Department of Defense went in front of Congress, that committee, and asked for $10 million to build a biological agent which would be destructive or contrary to the full functionality of the human immunological system. The system that we rely upon to remain relatively free of disease. So this was the pretext upon which they asked for the money. They got the money. They eventually built HIV. And HIV was part of this whole train of death and destruction. It was one of the early tests. They let it go in Africa. You all know that. They let it go here in the homosexual community with intent, and they only went for the most sexually active members of the homosexual community to get the so-called protection injections. It was laced with stuff. They put it in the hepatitis B vaccine. That's how they did it here.
Yeah.
In Africa,
yeah,
they put it in the smallpox vax. So I think HIV was the first rather obvious large-scale precursor to what we have now. They've done a lot of research over the decades, and it's right there. All right. Now, next on the agenda tonight, Pfizer. Now, remember, 75,000-plus pages of Pfizer documentation was released. There's a lot in there. I don't know that someone's gone through the whole 75,000 at one time, but there's a lot of data there that is yet to surface, I suspect. Pfizer so-called vax, it's a bioweapon, we know it's not a vaccine, induces turbo cancers. Okay, this is a very short article, and then we're going to hear a little video. But this is not a surprise to any of you who have been listening to this program for any length of time. You know that cancer is all over the place. In fact, Erica has a generic view of this whole viral issue as being one of it's an oncogenic issue. It causes cancer.
It sure does, in more than one way. In the protein
multiple.
Itself, because it interferes with a couple of those tumor promoter, tumor suppressor genes, the P53 and the BRCA1. That's a big deal. That means the DNA cannot be repaired and the cell cannot commit apoptosis when the time comes. If there's too much damage, the cell should die. Well, this cell doesn't get the signal to die, so it keeps proliferating. And then the effect on the T cells that are supposed to be surveilling the body for aberrant-looking cells, cells that don't quite look right, that's messed up.
I there are many triggers for the cancers we're seeing now. And also, at the risk of being repetitive, we've said this over and over again, many, many, many of these people have no symptomology of cancer. And they go into the doc, and they come out after a few tests. Well, I'm really sorry you have stage 4 breast cancer, stage 4 kidney cancer, whatever. This is stunning what's happening.
Yeah, it is. It really frightening. And, the virus evidently can do this as well. It doesn't have to be these injections. The virus has those properties as well.
Sure.
Because the virus was designed to incapacitate the immune system, maybe not totally take it out, but affect it in ways that make cancer much more likely.
Here's this little story. Pfizer vax induced turbo cancers. So they're saying that the vaccine is inducing cancers. Okay. It's very short. In a new Belgian study by such and such, et al., they injected 14 mice with two Pfizer COVID-19 mRNA vaccines. 2 days after the second Pfizer dose, one of the 14 mice, at 7%, died suddenly. 2 days after the second Pfizer dose, 7%, one out of 14 died suddenly. Had turbo cancer with lymphoma infiltration of many organs. So it didn't just die suddenly, it was loaded with cancer. Liver, kidneys, spleen, lungs, and intestines. This mouse was cancer toast 2 days after the second Pfizer shot. The turbo cancer mouse had shown no clinical signs of illness before its sudden death. This is the second study to show turbo cancer after Pfizer mRNA vaccination. These were the types of studies that Pfizer and Moderna should have performed on mice, but never did. Key point. This 14-mouse study was larger than the study done to approve COVID-19 Omicron bivalent mRNA booster shots, which were given to hundreds of millions of people. And that study only had 8 mice. There you go. How's that?
Yeah.
No notice. You don't get a FedEx delivery saying you better go have an MRI or a CAT scan or blood test work or tox screens or whatever you want to get. You just no notice. All of a sudden you've got stage 4. You're dying.
Well, as Nurse Ann said, a lot of times these cancers are being discovered as they're working a patient up for something else, seemingly unrelated.
Happenstance. It's just, yes, they stumble into it. Here's Dr. Ryan Cole talking about cancers, turbo cancers, taking off like wildfire. This is pathologist Dr. Ryan Cole.
It with the injection, and then once that cell culture starts producing the proteins that it's supposed to make, then you separate those out to say, are these cells making the target protein we want? Are they making the spike protein? And so it's supposed to weigh about 141 kilodaltons. And so we put a little electrical field on a little gel, and these proteins migrate, and then they stop according to their weight and electrical charge. And it was fascinating to look at that study and go, wait, we have 100 kilodalton weight proteins and 190, but nothing at 141 that would be a spike protein. So my concern scientifically is these products are making the body make unknown proteins as well, to the which we could be having these autoimmune responses. And if you look at the vial purity, the purity of the mRNA in the vials, you know, if you take a drug, you want to know, if I go buy an aspirin, it's actually aspirin I'm taking. I don't want half of it to be aspirin and half of it to be laced with some other production side product that may be harmful. We know microRNAs are a known carcinogen. There's medical literature showing how sequences of mRNA can either be helpful in the body, natural ones, or can be extremely harmful. And certain types of cancers, you see increased circulating microRNAs in these patients. And so to know that there are these unknown, fragmented parts of mRNA in these vials is also poor manufacturing, one, but two, medically dangerous, and three, we don't know what all those things can be causing. I mean, the panoply of side effects that we're seeing in injured patients are numerous, and these are just, you know, tip of the iceberg reasons why these things could be happening. So, yeah, these are impure manufactured products, and other proteins could be causing the harm, not just spike protein.
One of the things we've discussed in the past is you were observing an uptick in certain rare cancers, also like lymphomas and things, the more common things like that. You were noticing some kind of a bacterium that was, you know, only in childhood that was now appearing in adults. You were wondering about that. I guess has the literature around that, if the studies progressed anywhere, or what do we know now? What are we seeing?
So I'm not the only one making the claim anymore, which is comforting. Many pathologists around the world are seeing it. As you know, my colleagues in Europe have pointed it out. As I travel the world and give lectures and whatnot, I've had so many doctors, like I said last time, approach me, gosh, I'm seeing this in my population. Oncologist in England that I was talking to a couple months ago, lymphomas, myelomas, leukemias, at rates he's never seen in his 40 years of practice. I was on the phone last week with a oncologist here in Texas, where we are right now, and he, you know, same thing. He has patients he's had cancer-free, their markers are all down, they've been cancer-free for 1, 2, 5, 10, 17, 20 years in some of these patients, and after they're shot, second, third, fourth, cancer's back like wildfire. Mm-hmm. And that goes to all these immune suppression mechanisms that are multitudinous, and it's trackable now in the CDC data. So there's one researcher has a great Substack, The Ethical Skeptic, and you can see how he shows the manipulation by the CDC of their data sets. But if you do the pull forward data and look at what we call variation above trend, in the lymphomas we're seeing, you know, about a 4 sigma increase.
And what does that mean exactly, a 4 sigma?
So if I have 100 patients that get lymphoma out of, you know, say 100,000 every year, now I'm seeing, you know, maybe 105 patients. So, you know, it's that subtle change, but it's a statistically significant change. And then what you do is say, wait, this month it was 4 above the 100, now it's 5 above 100, now it's 12 above the 100. So you're seeing, you know, the trend should be this historically, and what you're watching is the trend doing this. And so if you read some of the breakdowns of his data sets in some of the solid tissue tumor cancers ages 0 to 54, now what we're seeing is a 12 sigma increase. And so these are massive amounts compared to, you know, statistical analysis year over year over
year. The baseline,
basically. The baseline, yeah. And you would expect, you know, okay, there's going to be some of that from people missing oncology screenings during the pandemic. I appreciate that argument. A degree of that is going to be true. But then look at the population 0 to 54, where the cancer rate is very low to start with. All of a sudden, why are we seeing very aggressive cancers in these age cohorts? If you start looking at Bradford Hill criteria of causation and correlation, things start adding up very quickly. And across the board, you saw in the meeting today when I gave my talk, I said, raise your hand if you have a friend or a family member that after the shots ended up with a cancer. And it was astounding the number of hands that went up in that room. Is it everybody? Do I want to scare people thinking, oh, you got the shot, you're going to get cancer? No. But it's more significant statistically than it was before. And it was after the shots rolled out that this started happening for multiple immune reasons and other harm reasons.
Just in terms of raw numbers, what kind of differences are we talking about in areas that, you know, come to mind for you?
The raw numbers are going up. The percentage numbers look scarier than the raw numbers, but the trend line is consistently going up.
So you hear this term brandished about turbo cancers.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Good question. It was popularized by a colleague over in Europe in an article she wrote, and she's a breast pathologist. I've met with her at some of the international meetings. And in her cohort, she noticed younger women developing more aggressive cancers. And in oncology and pathology, we look at certain tumors and say, okay, they have this stage cancer, they have this grade of tumor. You know how it's going to behave over a set period of time. What's happening is these cancers we're used to seeing, their growth patterns and their behavior are completely out of character. And so this adjective that's been tacked on to cancer is describing a phenomenon that's unusual in the practice of medicine. Again, observationally across countless professionals around the world saying, wait a minute, I haven't seen cancer behave this way before. What's going on? So turbo cancer is something that wasn't there and all of a sudden it's everywhere. So it goes from being in one spot to everywhere all at once. And it happens in a manner that is timeline accelerated. A radiologist called me, this was many, many months back, and he had two 31-year-old women that same day come into his office for scans, and they both had stage 4 breast cancer after their third shot. And so these are the type of stories we hear. Young, healthy marathon runner, et cetera, gets his third shot. All of a sudden, he has stage 4 lymphoma.
So really incredibly sad to hear this again from Dr. Ryan Cole. We did play this a few weeks back. Very important to hear it a second time. All of a sudden, people generating cancer, and he said it clearly, all over the place. It's not just one issue in many people. It's multi-organ, multi-location, and it's out of control. It's like a wildfire in the body of cancer. And I don't know where this is going to go, except down a very dark and unpleasant hole. For a lot of
people. And again, the fact that we are seeing it also in the unvaxxed, and you know, particularly around the people who are working around or living with vaxxed people, we've had many cases of that where that person came down with aggressive cancer as well.
Right.
And then this is an interesting one that I came across couple days ago, and this was posted 2 years ago. This is an unvaxxed person. Dr. Tenpenny said on a recent video that an ER doctor told her he is seeing 30 to 35 men per week coming in with swollen testicles. This happened to my boyfriend last year in May 2020. He came down with a virus. He was never tested for COVID, and one symptom was swollen testicles, also shortness of breath, fever, and chills. He had stage 4 colon cancer, but had been improving with alternative treatments.
Oh, no.
His blood test showed the cancer was almost in the normal range at the end of April. He was treated for the virus with a Rife machine, and the breathing issues resolved, but by the end of May, he was very weak. And a CT scan in June showed his cancer had exploded with over 30 large tumors all over his body. He passed away in October after nothing we did helped him after he had that virus.
They
said this, that doctor, I think his first name is Nathan Goodyear in Arizona, is treating, I think he's an oncologist, naturopathic oncologist. A lot of people who have had the virus dealing with cancer now.
Lots.
So don't underestimate it. It is a bioweapon, whether it comes to you through a virus or through a needle or through shedding. That protein, that spike protein all by itself, has the ability to get into your mitochondria, disrupt the mitochondria in very adverse ways so that the cell can't produce ATP. That in and of itself will make it susceptible to cancer. And then the fact that the protein can interfere with these DNA repair pathways, P53 and BRCA1, again, that's another strike against surveilling or controlling for cancer.
Let me just quickly jump to Novavax to let all of you know again what these monstrosity of these corporations are. Horrible. Monstrosity is too nice a word. They've come up with a vax called Novavax. Most of you know this. And what's in Novavax? You just heard a very important description, brief, about how deadly the spike protein is. So tell them what's in Novavax.
Well, that's just 100% pure, full-length spike produced in this insect vector, baculovirus vector, where they have these moth cells that they transfect with the gene to produce the spike, and then they purify it, isolate it, purify it, and put it into a carrier. In this case, it's something called Matrix M, so that it can be uptaken by the body. It's kind of a emulsified carrier for the spike, but it is synthetic. It's derived from that, what's the name of the tree?
Saponin? In the tree.
It's a saponin, yes. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the tree.
Yeah.
But the carrier itself, this Matrix M, is an irritant. It will cause hemolysis, meaning it will destroy your red blood cells. And that, in this case, is deemed to be a good thing because it will get the attention of the immune system.
Right. That's the Novavax vaccine.
And that's I thought they were out of the game. I thought they were going to fade away. No, they will be a player in this next round of boosters.
You might get a trillion or more spike proteins in one shot from Novavax. How smart is that? Look, whether you get the virus or the injection, you're going to end up with spike proteins. So don't forget about the virus. As she says, that's correct. You get the virus, you're going to get spiked, and you will become damaged. To one degree or another. You may feel better in a couple of days, a couple of weeks. I don't know.
Yeah, people vary in,
yes,
you know, how their immune system deals with it. And a very robust immune response is not always the best thing.
Good point.
You know, this is a disease that kills by generating a cytokine storm. And that's what you don't want. That's why it's somewhat controversial to be taking a lot of things that ramp up the immune system. Because I wouldn't be doing any of that. That just makes no sense. Antioxidants, yes. You need a little bit of oxidants to fight a virus, and your immune system is equipped to do that.
That's
yes.
Right.
And one of the things that happens when you become infected with this virus is the neutrophils, which is one of the white blood cells, go way high, and the lymphocytes drop down. In the meantime, the neutrophils are producing hypochlorous acid, which is a combination of your chloride ions and hydrogen peroxide. So they're going to spew out this stuff to try to destroy this invader. And at the same time, once they're producing this hypochlorous acid, That's the signal for them to produce what we call neutrophil elastase, and that is the enzyme that cleaves the spike protein to reveal the seven amyloidogenic sequences. So now your blood can get nice and thick. Protein misfolding.
There it is. Those seven sequences cause your normal proteins, of which there are countless thousands of different kinds, to misfold. And once they're misfolded, they're no longer functional, and they begin to agglutinate, aggregate, and cause real trouble. Whoever put this thing together didn't miss a beat. It seems like they've caught it all. And they factored in shedding. They knew what was going to happen. They knew that any sexual contact or wet kissing, whatever, or touching is going to do. They knew what it was going to do. They knew all this. This is beyond evil. Oh, and most people don't know that the human cell makes hydrogen peroxide as an oxidizer to kill things when it needs it. People don't remember that either.
It's done in a controlled fashion. And then you have another enzyme in your body whose only job it is to produce oxidants. That's NADPH, NADPH oxidase. That's your immune system, and it's done in a controlled fashion, not haphazardly. But in this particular disease, the infection, it provokes the immune system in a way that it gets out of control. And you can fry your tissues with this oxidative stress. It's no joke. Oxidation is a form of burning.
Well, it's like immolation comes to mind. It cooks, it destroys things. It's like an incinerator.
Yeah, and it's especially good when iron is present.
And there's that too, which we've spent a lot of time on. Erica really pioneered that wake up about iron issue.
I think it's being leveraged in this disease because the spike protein will, because it acts as a hepcidin mimetic, it will prevent iron from leaving the cell. So all this oxidative stress that's occurring inside of the cell will be made much worse if there is iron present.
Oh, yes. So many problems. So many variants.
Anyone that's telling you to drink hydrogen peroxide or chlorine dioxide doesn't have a clue.
No.
That's the fast track to degeneration.
We've got six things under our names and guests for you. The Pfizer vax-induced turbo cancers, Dr. Ryan Cole, Vandenbosch is there, the JAMA study, the actual study itself as well. So that's there for you. We have a couple minutes here. Real quickly, I'm going to ruin a lot of fun for some of you, as we are. There's another story out, which we'll probably spend more time on next time. And it has to do with the question of exactly how dirty are public hot tubs and public swimming pools? There's a new CDC report, and sometimes reasonably competent science comes out of the CDC. So when you're in the pool, you're not in there alone, and no chlorine is not going to take care of all the pathogenicity in that recreational water you're in. And if you're in a hot tub, it's even worse. Many of these hot tubs have wood. I've never been in one. But you can't disinfect wood. It's got infinite number of pores. Things grow in there. And you're in there. You are literally in there transmitting to whoever else is in there and or receiving many types of pathogens that they're issuing and that the water itself contains. Anything to add to that?
Oh, I think that that study or that article actually came out a few years back.
It's an older piece. It's 2018, but it's very relevant, especially now when people
are exuding
spike proteins. Maybe the mRNA, we suspect that is absolutely there. And you're going to sit in the water with that? Are you crazy?
You know, a number of people ask at the advent of summer, maybe less so now, if it's safe to go to a swimming pool, a public swimming pool? Mm-hmm. And will they get sick? And thinking that the chlorine, if there's any risk of spike protein or virus, the chlorine should kill it. Well, maybe theoretically, but apparently the people who are sensitive to shedding have reported that, no, these swimming pools, these public swimming pools, even with hefty doses of chlorine being added, they still feel the effects of shedding. Why that is, I don't know. I mean, chlorine's an irritant anyway. If you've already developed a sensitivity to the protein, the spike protein, an environment like that, when you have chlorine and other chemicals present, it's... No.
No, right. I really like the term in the article, recreational water. kind of cute. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight for this Friday. Hopefully you've been able to use some of the information we presented this week and every week. Do share the programs and do your own research. We're not telling people how to think, just asking them to engage in the process. Okay, thank you. Wonderful job. Take care.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
We'll be right back.